Okay, we'll start in 1 second. It's 9:30, so we'll start in one. Just give one more minute. I'm so sorry about last night. The Zoom wasn't working. Baruch Hashem, it's working again, which is amazing. It was actually a problem that many people had. It seemed to have been I'm not sure what the problem was with the whole Zoom system, but Baruch Hashem, it seems to be up and running today, so we should have no problem learning in Emirat Hashem. Okay, so we will begin in 1 second. I'm sorry you are all muted, because we're going to start the class, and there is a screen here in front of you. You can see some of the text that we'll be exploring today, that we'll be continuing. So we'll start. So last week we were exploring, and we did a few of the Mefarshim, which I'll just recap soon, when we finish the next few, just to get it all as one. The whole idea of how is it possible, I mean, what did the Jewish people really want? Did they want to actually serve Avodah Zarah, idol worship? And what was Aaron's role in the whole story? I mean, because it's difficult to understand how Aaron, Moshe Rabbeinu's brother, as we explained last week, the great Aaron, how could it be that he should be part of such a terrible, seemingly such a terrible sin? So we explored it last week through the eyes of the Eben Ezra, and we did the Arach Chaim. And today we will continue and we will look inside in the Ramban. The Ramban Nachmanides, he gives his view, similar, it's a little bit similar, but his own view as far as what the Jewish people wanted and what how Aaron responded and how Moshe Rabbeinu responds. Now, I just want to share one thing with the screen, because I copied and pasted, so this could be a drop confusing in that I'll use my marker so that you can see where we're up to, because it goes sort of back and forth to both columns. So hopefully you should be able to follow. Okay, so here we are. So we'll start right away. We'll go into the Ramban, because like I said, I'd like to maybe hopefully get a whole picture today and be able to summarize it together and get a bit of a clear picture of what went on and continue in the actual story. So in the Ramban quotes that part of the pasuk that we read last week, that they asked for a God, Asher Yelchu Lefaneinu, who will walk before us. So the Ramban says, what was their request? Eloikus harbe ivulahem. So the truth is like this. This part we won't read. This is Rashi. Ramban first quotes Rashi, and he says that they actually were asking for a God. They wanted a God because Moshe Rabbeinu is gone, and now they don't know what to do. So Ramban says, "Ve'ein l'shoinay mechuvan." He doesn't agree with Rashi. He says, "No, this is not the way we can explain the psukim." Aval ha'kosav hazeh hu mafteach. Our pasuk is actually the key. L'da'as nochein, to properly understand inyan ha'egel, the concept of the egel, u'machsheves oisav, and what the thoughts of those who were making the egel. It's obvious, and we know that the Jewish people didn't think that Moshe was God, and that he, with his own power, did all the miracles. They didn't think Moshe did the plagues with his own hands and with his own power, and that he was the one that split the sea. So it doesn't make sense that they should be saying, since Moshe's gone, now we need a God. They didn't think Moshe was God. So what does it mean when they say in the pasuk, Moshe is gone, and now we need, they use the word Elohim, but we need something to walk in front of us. And then the Ramban says, V'ayt ki b'perish amru, because clearly they said, Elohim asher yelchu lefaneinu, which we can translate as a God, or we'll see perhaps a master who will walk before us. Loisha yihyu noisnim lahem chayim ba'olam haza ay ba'olam haba. They didn't say they want a God who's going to give them life in this world or in the world to come. Aval hayu mevakshin Moshe acher. So Ramban's approach is, what was it that the Jewish people felt a very strong lack? And when they came to Aaron, what were they asking for? They were asking for another Moshe. Amru, what did they say? Moshe, shehoira lanu haderech mimitzrayim vadhena. Moshe, who showed us the way from Egypt until now. Shehoyu hamasoim al pi Hashem biyad Moshe. And we know that all of the travels that the Jewish people did throughout the desert, and up even, I mean, they hadn't gone very much in the desert yet, but up until now, were, it's true that they were according to Hashem. But how did Hashem allow us to know what to do? It was always through Moshe Rabbeinu. And then we go to the first column again. Hine avad mimenu, and now he is lost. So that's why they say, Nase lanu Moshe acher, make for us another Moshe, Sheyoyre haderech lefaneinu, who will show us the way before us, Al pi Hashem biyodai, through Hashem, through his hand. In other words, they want some type of a leader, some type of a master, some type of a conduit by which Hashem can give his messages to the Jewish people. That's why they say, Moshe, the one who took us out, who took us out of Egypt, he's the one that's gone. And they don't say when they approach Aaron, Loi hakel asher ha'elam, not God who took them out, because that's not what they were asking to replace. Ki yitzdarchu l'ish elikim, they wanted a godly man. V'chein tuchal lahavin, and we can understand this, mitshuvas Aaron el Moshe, from the response that Aaron has to Moshe Rabbeinu, because when Moshe comes down and he says to Aaron, ma'asalachahamazeh, what did this nation do to you, ki yaveisa alav chata gedayla, that you've brought such a sin upon them? How does Aaron respond? V'haysa tshuvasai, so he responded, v'yayimru, Vayomru li kum asei lanu aleikim. So Aaron says to Moshe, they said to me, get up and we will make for you a god. V'amar, and make for us a god. V'amar lahem lami zahav. So Aaron continues his narrative to Moshe and he repeats everything that happens. And I said to them, who has gold, his parku should remove it. V'yitnu li and give it to me. V'ashal cheyu ba'esh, and I will throw it into the fire. V'hine Aaron misnatzel l'Moshe. It's interesting because Aaron is defending himself here, right? That's what he's doing, because Moshe is saying, how could you do such a thing? And this is a very strange defense. We say Aaron is defending himself to Moshe, v'amr lai, al yichar af, adoini, don't be angry, my master. V'hu kim maisiv al chatasai pesha. And it sounds almost like he's making himself sin worse when he says, they asked me, and I said, take off your gold. So what is the answer that Aaron is giving? Sha'imer kihen bikshu mimenu avei dezara. It sounds like, if you're going to say, they asked an idol, v'asol lehem biyadav, and I made it for them with my own hands. V'lam alla yichar apai. So why shouldn't Moshe get angry? Uma chata gedayla mizu. What could be a greater sin than this? So we must interpret that Aaron is saying something else to Moshe. Not that they asked for avodah zarah, because Aaron wouldn't have answered Moshe, sure, they asked for avodah zarah, and willingly I made them an avodah zarah. Doesn't make sense. Avala inyan kemoshe amarti. That's why the Ramban says that's a proof that what I am saying is correct. Shalai bakshu ha'egel. They didn't request the calf, this egel, this avodah zarah, liyos lahem lakel meimis umechaye, to be for them a god who brings to life and puts to death. V'kiblu avodas elikusu aleihem, and that they should accept as a god upon them. Aval yirtu sheyeh lahem b'makay Moshe. What they're asking is just something in place of Moshe. Moire darkam, to show them the way. V'zehu isnatzlusay shal Aaron, and this is the excuse, and this is how Aaron is explaining himself. Ta'an, so this is his taina, this is what he says to Moshe. Ki lai amru li rak she'ese lahem eleikim asher yelchu lifnehem bimkoimcha adoini. They only asked me for a leader who will go in front of them instead of you, like in your place as a substitute. Shelo yadu ma hayalecha, because they didn't know what happened to you. V'im tashuv im lai, if you will return or you won't return. That's why they needed somebody who's going to show them the way. Now we're on again in the second column in the middle. Kol's man, shalaitiya ata imahem, the whole time that you won't be with them. Because now they don't know what to do. They're lost. V'mulai toshuv. And if, and Aaron said to, this is the Ramban's view, what Aaron said to Moshe was, do you know what they had in mind? That if you do return soon, and hopefully you will, ya'azvuhu, they'll leave this replacement, it's just a substitute, v'yelchu acharecha, and immediately They will go after you, kibarishayna, just like at the beginning. And Aaron says, v'chein haya hadavar, and the truth is Aaron doesn't have to say this. The Rambam says, this is what we see actually happened. We didn't read those psukim, but we know what actually happened when Moshe did come down from the mountain and he saw what the Jewish people were doing. We're going to read those psukim today. He actually burned this calf, right? He burned it and he took the ash, like the ashes from it, and he sprinkled it on the water and he made the people drink it. So we see an interesting thing. He came on Sharoah Homes Moshe. When the people saw Moshe when he came down from the mountain, what was their reaction? Miyad. Immediately they left the egel and they actually despised it. They allowed him to burn it and to spread the ashes of it onto the water. And nobody protested. If it was a god, would they let Moshe do that? If they actually thought that was a god, would they have allowed Moshe to actually burn it? Would they not have protested? We know what they would have done. So that's how the Ramban says, you see, they never thought it was a god. Obviously not. And then he continues, as he says in detail. V'chein tira shelo hechicham. And we see that they didn't actually tell him off. V'loi omer lehem klum. They didn't say anything. Aval to Moshe Rabbeinu, aval bevoyei b'machane. But when he came into the camp, vayares ha'egel u'macholes, when he saw the eagle and he saw the dancing and he saw the celebration, miyad baruchu mimenu, immediately they ran away from it. V'hu lokach ha'egel v'yisrafaisai, and he took the eagle, he burned it, vayashkaisai, and he made them drink it lahem, v'loi ma'anu klal, and nobody prevented him from doing it. Nobody stopped him. V'ilu hayalahem lalekim, if it was truly a god, ein derech shi'aniach adam malkai, it's not the way that a person will allow his king, v'elekav, and his god, l'sreifas eish, to be burned in fire. Hein yisreif es tayavaschem leineyem v'lo yiskaluhu, as we can say, is it possible that somebody's going to take your god and burn it and you won't stone them? So obviously it wasn't a god. Now, Ramban continues something very interesting, because this was one of the questions we had. So according to Ramban, you can see, what did the Jews want? Just a substitute for Moshe. They felt they were lost. This is a very big, long, dark, difficult journey ahead of them. Hashem had used Moshe up until now as the conduit, as the one, the intermediary, so to speak, to send his messages to the Jewish people to guide them. He's gone. What are we going to do? Now comes the interesting question. When the Aaron, okay, so we explained last time there were many different views about how the actual calf appeared, so to speak, and we said there was the concept of the Erev Rav. We said also the concept of Micha with that little note that said Ale Shur, that the calf should rise up, you know, like, which was, really was Yosef's bones. But the point is that there are many reasons why perhaps out of the fire appeared specifically this form. But let's see the Ramban's view. The Ramban has a fascinating view. And in the Ramban's view, it seems that Aaron did have some part in actually creating the golden calf as we know it. Why? And let's see, what was his logic? So he says, V'hine Aaron hu asher hoitzi hatzura hazois. It was Aaron who actually made that this is the form that came out. Why? What was this idea of Aaron? Because we, and how do we know? Because it says, kihem loy amru loy. They didn't tell him, ma yase, what to make. Shor, or kesef, or eiz, v'zulosam, whether it be an ox, or a sheep, or a goat, or anything like that. They never specified. V'zehu maimer hachachamim, she'amru melameid, she'ivu, leloikus harbe. They wanted many gods. What does many gods mean? They didn't know which one. They weren't sure. They didn't know what kind of form they wanted. Ki heim lo yodu bame yivcharu. They didn't know what to choose. Ve'eza hatoiv lahem. And which would be the best for them, provide them with the most benefit. What's the idea here? Ve'hakavana la'aren hoysa. What was Aaron thinking? Why did he specifically make this shor come out, this eagle? It wasn't a shor, it was an eagle. This calf, this golden calf. Mepnei she'yisrol hoyu bamidbar. Where were the Jewish people now? In the desert. And we know what's a desert. A desert, chayrev shmama, like a deep, desolate, dark, you know, dark place this desert was. It was a challenging place. It was a place full of danger. V'hachurban u'shmamais ha'olam yavoyu min hatzafein. This is sort of a bit of like a Kabbalistic idea, but even just halachically speaking, it says that when Hashem created the world, is a fascinating thing. It says Hashem created the world, but he didn't complete it. So there's different explanations. What does it mean he didn't complete it? Some explanations is because he left some for us to do so we can be partners with Hashem. But there's also a concept that Hashem created the world and he completed the east side and the west side and the south side, but the north side, Safain, he left open. And that represents many, many different things. In Torah, we have a concept that the north side is on the left. Depends which direction you're standing. But in Eretz Yisrael, so we would say that the north is what we call the left. That is the source of all challenges. Gevura, severity, difficulties, darkness. Even nowadays, okay, in Australia it's a little bit different, but in Eretz Yisrael, when you're talking about the right part of the world, the north is the place which cold comes from, right? That's the cold side. So the north represents darkness. And we see something interesting. Aaron had an interesting logic. He said, you know, they want something that will provide them with guidance. And we'll see soon, not just guidance, but actually something that they can focus on. And that will be the representation, if you want to say, of God to them. In other words, it's not God, but it's through that Hashem will send all the things that he has to send, whether it be guidance or whether it be protection. What's the best thing to use? So the best thing to use was something which represents the north, the danger, because that's the place where they are going to find themselves. So let's see. I'll read it to you. You'll see he says, "K'dechsev mitzofein tiftach hara." The pasuk tells us in Yirmiyahu that from the north, the evil comes. "Al kol yoshvei haaretz," on all of the ones who dwell in the land. "She'ein hakavana b'melech bavel bilvad." So the truth is that the intention there is about Babylonia, who were the ones who destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash, and they are from the north. But as the Mefarshim tell us, it's not just the nation living in the north that it represents. "Kasher yireh b'niglam min hakosav," as we see clearly from the pasuk, "aval ki min hasmol tavay midas hadin lo'ilam." From the left side, that's where the concept of judgment, justice, comes into the world. "Lahashiv al kol yoshvei haaretz kira asam," to actually pay back to people what they actually deserve. So unfortunately, none of us are perfect. So there's always perhaps something negative that we could be deserving. Where does it come from? It comes from the north. And very fascinating thing. How does Aaron know, and more than Aaron, the people, they were very comforted when they saw this eagle come out of the fire, because they were also already aware that the eagle represents the north, represents this left side. How? Where did they know it from? So something very magnificent that they had just experienced. So we say, "V'hine b'maisa ha-merkava amar, p'nei shor mehasmol l'arba asam." Maisa Merkava is actually referring to specifically really the story in Yecheskel, when it tells us that Yecheskel had this tremendous vision and the heavens, so to speak, opened up, which means the spiritual realms opened up to him. And what did he see? He saw the angels and all the different spiritual realities. And in the spiritual realities, obviously, there is Hashem. But Hashem is a king, and a king has a whole entourage. And what's around the king? And there's this vision of a Merkava, which is a chariot. And the rider, obviously, is Hashem. But the chariot has four wheels. And the wheel, which is on the north side, was represented by an ox. Again, the left, the north, is represented by the ox. Which is interesting. So what happened there? Which means like this, that the way to, so to speak, personify, or if you want to say physical, have a physical representation of this concept of the north in this world, you take a calf, a picture of a calf. And that to them will help them reflect upon the source of the calf, which, as we say, is that north side, that left side in the higher spheres, which represents justice. Okay, now what does that do? So let's see, he says like this. As he says, okay, so let's see, he says, V'lochen chashav Aaron, so Aaron thought, ki hamachariv yoyre derech makayim hachorban. Very interesting line. He says, the destroyer should be the one to guide them in the place of destruction. In other words, the source of the evil, if we can get to the source, which we know that the source of the evil, where it is in God, is not evil, it's just justice. But when it comes down here, we can feel it as something painful. Let the source of the evil be the one to guide them in that dark, difficult, challenging place. This is the thought process, a hard concept, but the idea being, and we'll see what the Ramban says, why does it, what does it mean? It's just symbolic, it's nothing. So the Ramban says, yeah, it is just symbolic. Because the idea is that whenever they would look at it, what would they focus on? They would focus and say to Hashem, we are in a challenging place. We are going through the desert. Please help us. Give us extra strength. How? Through the one that you have appointed to be in nature in charge of justice. Allow the justice to come to us in the best way possible, in a way that we can accept it. In other words, it was a way for them to focus on the source and, as Aaron wanted, to focus on who gives the desert its power. Hashem, obviously. It's not the desert that has any power on its own. It's not the snakes and the scorpions. It's not the darkness. It's Hashem. And how will they reflect upon that? While they're in the desert, they'll reflect upon, so to speak, the source of the desert, this calf, which only represents that Hashem is ultimately the rider of the chariot, and he is in control, and through the shar, he will hopefully send them all the strength and all the blessings that they need. This is, according to the Ramban, what was going through Aaron's mind, and the people were thrilled. That's what it says. And that's why it says, V'lochin chashav Aaron, ki ha-machariv yoyre derech makoy machorban, that the destroyer should come and be the guide in the place of destruction. Ki sham kaychei ha-gadol, that's where he has the greatest strength. Ubi yaysam ayvrim sham lakel ya'arev ruach mimaraim, and through that, they will actually be able to serve God. Kasher netzal al Moshe, just, and Hashem will send, so to speak, his blessings through the ox, just like up until that point, he had been sending his blessings through Moshe. That's what they felt. Moshe, they knew, had no power on his own. He's just a human being. But Hashem chose him as the vehicle, as the one, the conduit. So now he'll choose the ox, a calf, so to speak, to be the conduit. And through that will come all the blessings that they need. V'zeo sha'amar, that's why, what does Aaron say? Chag laHashem machar. There is a celebration for who? For God. Because the Ramban is saying, what should they celebrate to? Not the calf. The celebration tomorrow is to God. This calf will help them focus on the source of the calf, on God, on the source of the blessing, on Hashem. That's what Aaron was hoping. Now, interesting thing. So it goes on a little bit more about this Kabbalistically, and it shows, I just wanted to see if there's anything important on the bottom over here. Oh, a very interesting thing the Medrash tells us, that actually Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, a very fascinating thing, that, you know, you see your nation, Hashem said to Moshe, and they look like they're in awe at Matan Torah, right? They're looking up and they're seeing all these incredible spiritual visions. And Hashem says to Moshe, you know, they are in awe and they're connecting to me, but I see something else. I see that they have two perspectives at the same time. On the one hand, they're focusing on me. On the other hand, they're also focusing on all those spiritual forces, and in a sense, almost attributing some power to those spiritual forces independent of me, in a sense. Not independent totally, but as if they also have a power. Which means that at Matan Torah, Hashem already obviously realized that when the Jewish people are seeing this chariot, and seeing the four wheels, and seeing this calf, oh, they're already registering, huh, the calf is in the north. That means if we need help when we're in danger, perhaps that's the model that we should use. So Hashem already saw the danger over there. Moshe didn't, wasn't aware yet. But then when they built the golden calf, Moshe became aware of what actually happened to them. So that's according to the Ramban. So the Ramban has an interesting view. On the one hand, it's very interesting. According to the Ramban, it really wasn't anything to do with idol worship. Nothing at all. It was more, if you want to say, a concrete type of a form which represented something in the spiritual realms through which Hashem would send them the messages and the blessings that they need. So that's why, according to the Ramban, Aaron, in a sense, didn't mind to participate. It's not that he wanted them to serve that, but it was more that he didn't see it as such a terrible thing. He was obviously kept on hoping Moshe would come down in the middle, but nevertheless, it wasn't idol worship in the eyes of Aaron, and that's what he felt the Jewish people intended. So that's the Ramban's view. I want to just show you one more, and this a little bit summarized. The Kli Yakar is a bit similar to previous, but I'll just show you one part of the Kli Yakar. So the Kli Yakar says, Vayar ha'am, that the nation saw. Okay, because the Kli Yakar gives a whole introduction and he says, all the commentaries talk about this story and everybody wants to try to find a way to excuse the Jewish people because such a pure nation, and who wants to put such a terrible deed to such a pure, beautiful nation, right? Especially at this stage when they've just received the Torah and they're on such a high level. So he goes along with it. He says, yeah, I agree that it's impossible to say that the Jewish people actually wanted to serve idols. How could we say such a thing? So what happened here? So he gives his explanation very black and white. The other ones said it partially, and he says it like 100%. He says, Vayar ha'am, the nation saw. Which nation? When we mentioned that they saw that Moshe was late. Which nation saw that Moshe was late? Ze ha'erev rav. He says it was specifically that mixed multitude, those converts, so to speak. They weren't good converts. They were fake converts, so to speak. They were superficial, let's put it that way, superficial converts. They were the ones who were having trouble. And what did they see? That Moshe was late. What's the problem? If you think about it, they had a big problem. So he says, Ki b'chol mokim ne'emar loshon ha'am al ha'pchusim. Because every time you use the language the nation, it means the lowest of the nation. K'moshe perish Rashi, as Rashi explains, Parshas Ba'aloscha, al posuk vayhi ha'am kimis oinanim, that the nation were the ones who were complaining. So the nation means the lowest ones. What did these people see? Ki b'yishe sh'moshe, that Moshe's late. Yan ki haya yadeya lahem shalai alu mimitzrayim al pi Hashem. They knew that when they left Egypt, who allowed them to leave Egypt? It wasn't Hashem who sanctioned their leaving. Who allowed them? Ela Moshe me'atzmai. Moshe himself he'elam took them out. The SP Hashem Loishal, as we know, he didn't actually ask Hashem, K'moshe ne'emar. As we know in this story, it comes out clearly. Hashem says, raid, we'll see soon, go down, Kishiche Samcha, because your nation has sinned. Why your nation? Your nation, V'loi Ami, not my nation, because Hashem refers to them as Moshe's nation. Ulu Umaze Omar Moshe, and like Moshe, so to speak, in a way, almost counteracts, and he says, "Im kain hu lama yecher Hashem ba'amcha v'loy ba'ami." So, if that's the case, why are you angry at your nation and not at my nation? In other words, Moshe says, "Okay, so if my nation sinned, why are you angry at everybody?" So you see that they are, in a sense, separated. They are only a portion. And who were the one? Who was the one that took them out of Egypt? And who was their guardian? Moshe. Now they have a problem. Here they are in the desert after the giving of the Torah, and Moshe seems to have disappeared. You can imagine what they feel like. Everybody feels lost, but they feel 10 times more lost. They have lost the one who took them out. They have lost their only sense of security. So v'choshashu ha'irav rav, shim lo yovei Moshe, shema yitzava Hashem l'garsha mitoich ha'eda. They've thought, if Moshe doesn't come, Hashem might command that they should be chased out from the congregation. Pen yachtiyu, maybe they will influence the rest of the congregation bad. Bigilulei Mitzrayim, with all of the idol worship of Egypt. Kikoshim geirim li Yisrael kisapachas, because these type of geirim who are superficial, who are not honest, that's a terrible thing. And that could influence the Jewish people in a very negative way, which is true, actually. So they had every reason to be worried. Uma shalai garash oisam adhein, and the fact that they weren't chased away until now, choshvu shalichvayid Moshe haya, they thought maybe it's just because of Moshe. And now he's gone. Al kein choshvu. Therefore, now they had to think very quickly and come up with some kind of manipulative idea, some kind of a plan, tachbula levakesh manhig acher, to choose a different leader, b'makay Moshe, instead of Moshe. Kizeh Moshe ha'ish, because this man Moshe lo yadonu mehayalai, right? We don't know what happened to him. That's what they say. Ratzalaymar lo yadonu b'meh, so now, what are they putting into the nation? What's their plan? They say to the people, you know, this Moshe, we don't know what happened to him, but they mean something more than that. We don't know what he had. Now, they have to quickly come up with a substitute leader that they could manipulate, that they know for sure will accept them, and they will be the ones, so to speak, to manipulate, and that they will not be chased away. What kind of leader is that? There's only one they could think of. That is idol worship. Okay, as he says, Ratzalaymar lo yadanu b'meh kaychei. So what do? They start to convince the Jewish people. You know, Moshe, it looked like he was getting direct guidance from Hashem, but we don't really know what means he was using. They say, Kivadai hayulay tmunas, maybe secretly he had a picture of Ezek Koichav, some kind of a star, Asher b'koichay hayamanig, and with that strength, like some kind of a, what we would call an idol, some form or some means, and that's how he was leading you, v'ayse nisim, and that's how he was doing miracles. And we are not so familiar, right? We don't know how to use all these things. We don't know exactly which one he had. So now they say, you know what? I have a good idea, they say to the people. Do you know the only one that might know Moshe's secret? As he says, Achiv. His brother. Let's storm his brother. He for sure knows what was Moshe's secret power. So let's go ask Aaron what to do. He must know what Moshe was hiding there. And then so that's why they come to Aaron, as they say, and make us a god, if you want to say. So he says, "Believe Sufik, he would know for sure, Ma'akeliyahu. Al Kain Anu writes in Shita Selanu, that's why we want that he should make for us Ezed Mus, some kind of a form, Sheyye Emtsoi, to be an intermediary, Beinenu Levein HaKaychavim, between us and, so to speak, the constellations, the Hasatan Heta Isam, and we know that the Satan helped along to the Erev Rav, because remember, as we said in Rashi, what did he show them? The Satan showed them Kiheralem Dmus Mitasei Shal Moshe, a bed of Moshe, as if Moshe was sleeping on a bed, like passed away. And where did he hang it? Bein shamayim la'aretz. He suspended it between the heavens and the earth. Why? What was the idea? As if Moshe is the connector between heaven and earth. And you need an object, something that will connect you, an intermediary to connect you to the heavenly spheres. That's what the Satan helped the Erev Rav, and therefore they were able to convince the people. As he says, Loimar Shahu Haya Kamay Emtsai Bein Shamayim Laretz, he's as an intermediary between the heavens and the earth. Al Kain Ratzu Heima Be'eze Emtsai Acher, so we need a different intermediary. For Azal Amru She'ivu Lalekos Harbe Lifi Shela Yodu Be'eze Tzura Yivcharu. They didn't know which one to choose, they wanted many gods. So you see the Kliyakar's thrust, that it was the Erev Rav totally, but their argument, obviously they were working very hard, and they were working hard to convince the Jewish people because it was their survival, and they knew that. And they managed to influence the Jewish people. They did, unfortunately. And to a certain extent, because truthfully, the rest of the Jewish people didn't really actually serve it the way the Erev Rav did. They actually looked at it, in a sense, as almost an idol, almost. Or you might say a little bit of an intermediary. Now, there are different views also. I just want to share with you, not different, but slightly, you know, if you want to say different angles. So the Rabbeinu Bechaye says an interesting thing, because there's an interesting question here. The Jewish people, especially according to the Ramban, remember we said that they came to Moshe Rabbein, to Aaron, and they said, we want a replacement, right, of Moshe. So the question is, why didn't Aaron just say to them, you're right, we need a replacement, we need a guide. He could have either nominated himself or nominated another great spiritual leader and said, you know what, let's choose so-and-so to be the substitute instead of Moshe. Why did Aaron instead choose to make a form of something almost like an object, instead of choosing another human being? So the Rabbeinu Bechaye addresses this question, and he says something very beautiful. He says, as we know, Aaron kept hoping that any moment Moshe is coming. So in a way, he was like really delaying, and he was very afraid of this whole situation. So he says, what did Aaron want? He thought, if you just choose an object, well, then as soon as Moshe comes down, obviously, everybody will prefer Moshe. But if I choose another human being, maybe, because, you know, people are people, and there's all kinds of people, and some people might connect to this new substitute better than they connected to Moshe, and therefore they, when Moshe comes down, they won't want to leave this new leader. They'll say, huh, forget Moshe, we like you. You can stay our new leader. So Aaron didn't, first of all, want any machloikes. You know, Aaron was the one who loved peace. He didn't want that. And he, of course, didn't want ever to slight or hurt Moshe's honor. So to him, he felt it would be so much easier for the Jewish people to resist and leave an object rather than another human being that they might feel connected to. So to him, it was better to do this than to actually choose, if you want to say, a replacement of Moshe. So it's actually an interesting view, quite a beautiful idea in a sense, because you do see, because Aaron was convinced Moshe was coming. To him, it wasn't a question. So that's why, interesting how he didn't choose himself, he didn't promote himself. This obviously flows along with Aaron's personality all the time. As we saw originally, when Hashem chose Moshe to go to Egypt, to go speak to Paray, and Moshe even shared verbally his concern. And he said to Hashem, Aaron's the older brother. How can I do this? He might feel bad. And Hashem said, don't worry about Aaron. He will have no hard feeling. And we saw how Aaron embraced Moshe with a full heart. Aaron was such an incredible human being that to him there was no jealousy, didn't come into his, I don't know, anywhere. So to him it was just, he was just pure good. So to Aaron, to God forbid, even put a test to the Jewish people of this sort was something that he wanted to stay away from. So, and for sure he wouldn't promote himself. That wasn't even in his mind at all. That wasn't even a suggestion for him to say, I'll replace Moshe temporarily. No, he didn't see himself that way at all. So that's what the Rabbeinu Bechaye explains. And just quickly, you can see the Kuzari, very beautiful. The Kuzari also has a similar thrust to when we read in the Evan Ezra, but he says a beautiful thing. He says that the Jewish people wanted a place to focus their tefillos. You know, we are interesting because we judge them, and yet without realizing that we have something very special, and we're now, I think, we appreciate it more than ever. We are very lucky every Shabbos, and the men every morning get to go to shul, daven with a minyan, they have an Aron Kodesh, you take out a Sefer Torah, you have a place. It's not that we think that the physical place is God or anything, but it's a place to focus your energy on God. It's a place to focus your mind on Hashem. We all know, and we take it for granted that we had that. The Jewish people wanted a place and an object to focus on Hashem. It's not that they wanted to replace God, God forbid. They just wanted something a little more concrete. That's all they needed. And that's what they said, let us serve with something tangible like the other nations, right? They didn't deny that Hashem took them out of Egypt. That's not what they wanted. Rather, they needed a focus, like, as what we have, you know, some place to focus their tefillos. And Aaron, very interesting, he was trying very hard to educate them. And interestingly, according to the Kuzari, he says the first step is to that they should actually clearly... So it's interesting because the Kuzari says more, not like a shul, more like an object, a concrete object. And that was actually quite wrong, a concrete object. So what does Aaron do? It's interesting. It's like if you have, for example, a teacher in a classroom and let's say with young children, and sometimes they want to do something, not a bad thing, but something that you know is not going to bring them good results. So sometimes what you might do is you might listen to the child and you might actually start to implement what they're saying and take them through the steps, and then they'll actually experience that it's wrong, that it's not getting them where they want to go. Let's say with a mathematical computation, right? So they say, do this, do that, do the next step, and they're doing it wrong. So you might take them through what they're saying and show them it's not going to get the right answer. And then they see clearly that what they want is wrong. So according to the Kuzari, Aaron was almost leading them on in a way just to help teach them, because talking is not the same. You can convince somebody in the mind, but they might still feel they're right. But once they actually make this calf and they see that it's nothing, Aaron thought, oh, for sure, they'll right away leave it and redirect to Hashem. So that might have also been part of the process of what Aaron was going through. And also, as we said, so the Beis HaLevi, he really also develops it a little bit more in the idea. Just like, you know, we have Kehanim, and they're special. And we have a Mishkan we had, and now we have a Shul. So that's what they wanted. They wanted something which was holier than them, that they could look up to, but that would connect them to Hashem. And Rabbi Yonis and Eibshitz says they wanted something like the Kruvim, which they had later on. But what was the problem, both according to the Beis HaLevi and Yonis and Eibshitz? What's the issue? We do have Kehanim, and we do have a Sefer Torah, right? We did have Kruvim, because there was one key problem. We can have all these things as long as they are in direct instruction from Hashem. You know, we said with the Mishkan, every time Hashem tells us to make something in the Mishkan, it says clearly that we make it in accordance to Hashem's command. Us as human beings cannot use our own imagination for this. We can only go according to how Hashem commands. So if Hashem would have commanded them to make an egel, that would have been fine. But Hashem didn't command them to make an egel. And since he didn't, then it fell into the category of like an avodah zarah. And that's the problem, because it wasn't with the direct instruction of Hashem. And it's interesting, because in life it's not always very, very clear. Sometimes it's quite a gray area. And that's why you need guidance, so to speak, to follow exactly, to know what Shulchan Aruch says, so to speak, to know what Torah says, what does Hashem actually allow us to do, and what does Hashem not allow us to do. So this is part, if you want to say, a little bit of a snapshot into some of the ways that we can a little bit understand how the Jewish people coming from Har Sinai can, so to speak, fall so low. Now, I want to show you one more beautiful concept before the time will be up. This is such a beautiful thing. I heard a very, very nice shiur from, it was online. I mean, I don't know if you Google it, you could probably hear it. He's very cute, Rabbi Eli Mansour. He's very, very good. And he's actually quite, should I say, entertaining. He's very nice. He speaks well. So he had a very beautiful thought, and I would like to share with you. It's on a future pasuk, and next week we're going to go more into the actual psukim in detail, the next few psukim. But I just want to show you, now that they've, you know, made this golden calf, as we said, they took off all their jewelry, we read it last week, and they're all celebrating there. And now I just want to show you what happens, as we know. Okay, I'll just quickly read you pasuk Vav and Zion. Oh, if I could find, let me just see, I'll scroll up, because I do have it here. Let me see. I want to show you just a few of the psukim. Like I said, next week we'll go a little more in depth, but to see what happens. Sorry. Oh, we're almost there. Okay. Yeah. Okay, here we are. Okay, beautiful. So now remember Aaron's whole tactic, push it off to tomorrow, right? Like, let's delay. So what happens? Aaron thought he had a good plan. First of all, they came with their jewelry so quickly, as we said. So it was made very, very quickly, and they threw it into the fire, and out comes this golden calf. And the neck, what happens? Vayashkimu mimacharas. They woke up early the next morning, instead of sleeping in as Aaron hoped. Vayalu oilais, and they brought different kinds of sacrifices. Vayagishu shlamim. peace offerings. Vayeshev ha'am lechol, and they sat down to eat, v'shasa, and to drink, vayakumu l'tzachek, and they got up to celebrate and to make merry. And as Rashi says, it was terrible things. They were engaging in all kinds of immorality and in murder, according to some opinions. This is when they killed Chur. Whatever it was a terrible scene. There was a massive celebration early in the morning. So poor Aaron's tactic hadn't worked. It says the Satan actually woke them up early in the morning. They were bright and early. Now, Moshe is still on the mountain, and the people are celebrating. They're bringing karbanis, and they're making merry, and Moshe is on the mountain. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe. And here we have Hashem speaks to Moshe. Lech raid. Go and down. Descend. Kishiches amcha, because your people, Asher ha'elisa meretz Mitzrayim, that you took out of Egypt, they have acted corruptly. Shiches, they have acted corruptly. Here you see how Hashem specifies your nation. What is your nation? The Erev Rav, right? Those people that you accepted that I didn't necessarily want you to accept. Those people, they are the ones who have corrupted everybody. Okay, so let's see what he says. Soru, so Hashem tells Moshe very harshly, Soru maher, they have quickly turned away min aderech, asher tzivisem, that I have commanded them. What does that mean, quickly? First of all, because according to Hashem, he says, listen, you are only delayed by such a short time in their eyes. I know what their problem is. They made a wrong cheshbon, but it's only a few hours. And look how quickly they jump into such negative behavior. Or we can explain it, it's so quick after Matan Torah. It's only a few weeks. It's such a short time. And look what happens from the path that I commanded them. And what have they done? Asu lahem egel masecha. They have made for them a molten calf. Yishtachavu lai, and they bowed down to it. Vayizbuchu lai, and they sacrificed it. Vayayimru, and what did they say? Eile eleikecha Yisrael. These are your gods, O Israel. Asher ha'elucha me'eretz Mitzrayim, that took you out of Egypt. Here also we can see that a little bit that it's the Erev Rav, because they are the ones who are talking to the rest of the nation. They are saying, these are your gods. They are, so to speak, inspiring and being leaders over here and trying to influence the Jewish people in a negative way. So here we can see a little bit of a divide between the multitudes and the rest of the Jewish people. Vayomer, and this is all Hashem telling Moshe. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. So Hashem says to Moshe, Ra'isi es ha'mazeh, I see this nation. Vihine am kshei oyrefu. It's a stiff-necked nation. They're very, very stubborn. They refuse to listen. And look how quickly they have corrupted their ways. And therefore, Hashem says, Va'ata hanichali, leave me alone. Va'yichar api bahem, and my anger is kindled against them. Va'achaleim, and I will annihilate them, I'll eat them, I'll totally destroy them. Ve'esa oischa l'goy gadol, I will make you into a great nation. Right, so here we can see Hashem is telling Moshe, I am finished with them. This pasuk is an interesting one. You see, it says, Hanichali, leave me alone. All the commentaries say, what does it mean, leave me alone? Hashem is telling Moshe what's happening. Moshe so far didn't know. So far in our pasukim, Moshe hasn't responded at all, right? He said nothing. It's like he's stunned. Hashem is telling him what's happening, and he is totally stunned. What does this mean, leave me alone? Usually you say, leave me alone, when somebody is annoying you, right? When they beg you and they talk too much, you say, leave me alone. Moshe didn't even start talking. What does leave me alone mean? So here the Mefarshim learned something very beautiful. They say, the Medrash tells us, Hashem was actually hinting to Moshe, start talking, start asking, start interceding. I want you to do something so that I should be able to say, leave me alone. Please cut me off and start to beg on behalf of the Jewish nation. This we had the same thing with Avram. When Hashem was going to destroy Sodom, what does he do? He could have gone and destroyed Sodom. But what does he do? He tells Avram what's happening and he shows him. Obviously, he wanted Avram to daven for them. That's why he shows it to him. So the same thing here. And here he is, Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu obviously takes the clue very well. And he starts davening. And here we have in the next pasuk a very, very fascinating word. It says, Vayichal Moshe's Pnei Hashem. And Moshe pleaded, he begged. But the word Vayichal is explained in many, many ways. So So vayichal means he pleaded. Vayichal also could mean from the word profane, like choil, you know, Shabbos and choil, weekday, profanity almost. He's saying, vayichal Moshe, Pnei Hashem, he says, oh my gosh, this is a disaster what you're proposing, Hashem. You think you're going to make me into a new nation and leave the other nation? This is a profanity. This is a disgrace. And another way to translate it from the word choile, sickness. Moshe felt so sick when he heard what Hashem said. Which part? Interesting. Not so much the part that the Jewish people sinned, but more that Hashem wanted to destroy them. Moshe was in such pain, and the Medrash describes, he davened so much that he felt faint and sick from his davening. He went into this like incredibly, if you want to say almost like the state of devastation for himself. Vayichal Moshe es pnei Hashem aleikov. And what does he say? Vayomer, lama Hashem yechera apcha b'amecha. Why, Hashem, are you so angry at your nation, Asher Eitzesa Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that you took out of Egypt b'koyach gadol u'biyat chazaka, with a strong power, with a great power and a strong hand? Interesting. He says to Hashem, why are you so angry at this nation who you took out of Egypt with a great power and a strong hand? We're going to stop there for a minute because we're going to continue next. I know it's the middle of the story, but I just want to share something, a very beautiful mashal that I heard from, that I said Rabbi Elementor, is that from the Dubna Magid. And it's phenomenal because it's such an interesting thing how he puts this in a very interesting perspective. This story, when you just read it superficially, it looks like the Jewish people did a terrible thing. Hashem is really angry. He wants to destroy the Jewish people. Moshe is, it's true, begging for the Jewish people. But the way he's begging, it's almost like, you know, when somebody really does something wrong and they just say, please, pity, pity, mercy, mercy, you know, But if you look a little bit deeper, as we already have seen, the sin wasn't as great as it seems. That's the first thing. Does Hashem really want to destroy the Jewish people? No. Does Hashem love the Jewish people? Obviously, yes, even throughout the whole story. Does Moshe want to defend the Jewish people? For sure. Does Moshe lose hope in his nation? No. And let's see, this is just one small glimpse into this whole theory, if you want, not theory, but this whole underlying theme of love that Hashem has of Moshe and the Jewish people. What's happening here? So if you think about this thing that Moshe is trying here to defend the Jewish people, right? That's what he's doing, because he's saying, don't do this. Why are you angry? So now if you say to somebody, if somebody does something against somebody else and you want to defend them, what logic will you use? So you'll probably try, first of all, to mitigate what they've done. And perhaps you might say, you know, they didn't realize how much they mean to you. You know, you haven't done that much for them. Why do you expect so much from them? This seems exactly the opposite. Here, Moshe is trying to mitigate the responsibility of the Jewish people, right? And what does Moshe say? Why should you be so angry at this nation whom you have just taken out of Egypt with a great power and a strong hand? That's almost the opposite. If Hashem put so much effort into taking the Jewish people out of Egypt, that makes their sin even greater. How dare they rebel against him? That's what it sounds like. So the Dubna Magid gives a beautiful mashal. And he says, imagine there's a person who's unfortunately lost his wife and now he wants to get married again. Okay, so he goes to the Shatrin and he asks the Shatrin, do you know a lady who would be good for me? And the Shatrin comes up with a lady. He says, I know a perfect lady. This man was comfortably off, you know, he was reasonably financially secure. And I know a very good lady. She's not so financially secure, but she's a phenomenal woman. She's great in everything. But because she's not so financially secure, she has to work very hard in a bakery. She works, you know, she bakes and she's, you know, she works all day in this shop and she's, you know. Okay, fine. The guy agrees because he's, you know, praises her too highly. So he says, okay, I'll meet her. Anyways, he goes to the bakery, he sees her. He says, yeah, looks like she's the right one for me. Well, anyways, the Shatrin waits a week and he's wondering what's happening. He doesn't hear any mazel tov. So he calls the guy and says, what's happening? So the guy says, you know what? I don't know what to do because I wanted to, you know, to propose to her. But she says, let's wait a while because I have a few debts that I still have to pay back. And after that, I'll marry you. And the man says to the Shadchan, really, I'm eager to get married even today. But I don't know what to do. She's, you know, convinced that she has to first pay back these debts. Okay, so the Shadchan says, I have an idea. Listen, why don't you ask her how much are those debts? I'm sure they're not so much. And you could just pay it back for her and then you can get married immediately. What could be the problem? Well, the guy says, great idea. So Yitaka goes to ask her how big are the debts. It was nothing, $2,000, $3,000. It was, for him, it was insignificant. He says, oh, no worries. I'll pay the debts. Let's get married. Okay, let's get married. But he's very eager and he's very excited. He says, let's get married now. Let's go to the Rabbanut now. Find this lady's in the middle of the bakery. She's middle of baking, so she's wearing her, you know, her dirty clothes and she's full of flour. And he schleps her. Come, let's get married. Obviously, it's just a mushel. Okay, so he takes her. And on the way, because, I mean, she's not going to go to her chuppah looking like that. So he says, come, let's stop at a beautiful shop. And he gets her a whole new wardrobe and especially a dress that she can go now to get married in. Phenomenal. Just one important detail. Before the woman agrees to go with him from the bakery, she takes out one of the half-baked rolls that's just literally half-baked and she stuffs it into her purse. The guy sees it, thought, sounds a bit strange, but okay, whatever. Anyways, they go to the, now they're on their way to the, you know, to get married, and he stops in the store, and he's going to give her a whole new wardrobe, and he buys her a whole beautiful wardrobe. So she's obviously taken off her dirty clothes that she would, her working clothes, and she thought she would just throw it out. But she sees that the man that she's about to marry, he takes those clothes, and he puts it into his bag. Okay, strange, they're both a bit strange. But they go, get married. Fantastic. Everything's wonderful. The first few weeks, blissful honeymoon, all fantastic. But time goes on and the first argument comes up. And the woman, you know, she doesn't respect him so much, so to speak. And he says something and she argues and she disagrees very strongly. And he starts to get very upset. And he says to her, I don't understand. How dare you contradict me like this? And he takes out the dress and he says, you see what I rescued you from? How dare you act this way to me? Well, she has an answer right away back and she takes her purse and she opens up and she takes out her half-baked roll and she says to him, who was in the rush to get married? Who was the one that was so eager? Who pulled me out of that bakery while I was in middle of my work, in middle of baking my bread? And what does the man start to think? He starts to remember, obviously, and he's filled with that first feeling of love that he had for her. And he thinks, oh, what am I getting so upset about? It's all nonsense. It's nothing. So the Dubna Magid says it's exactly what happened here. Hashem says to Moshe, look at this nation. How dare they? How could they act this way to me? And Moshe says, who was in the rush to take them out of Egypt? The Jewish people were supposed to be in Egypt for 210 years. Who took them out 190 years earlier? You, Hashem. How he says, "Bekayach gadol ubiyad chazaka," with a great power and a strong hand. What does that mean? You rushed it. You did it quickly and eagerly. Why? Why did you take the Jewish people out of Egypt so early? Because you loved them. And now, for this little mistake, you're going to reject them? That's what Moshe says to Hashem. We're going to stop over here, but you can see a beginning of a theme that's going to run through now. The love that both Hashem has for the Jewish people, the love that the Jewish people have for Hashem, and especially we'll see more next week, the love of Moshe Rabbeinu, the tremendous, tremendous love that he has for the Jewish people and how he defends them. So everybody's unmuted if you have any questions, anything.
I've got a question.
Sure, Hannah, sure.
How come Aaron seeing all of this? Why didn't he start to get them to build the Mishkan?
Okay, so that's Taka, a good question.
Rather than...
Yeah, very good question.
Like, start preparing.
Yes. So the truth is like this, because you would think a Mishkan is better, right? Because that's something that they've been commanded, so to speak, so they would be following Hashem's command.
Okay.
The problem is that they hadn't yet been given that command, that instruction. And even... as we said, to build a Mishkan without Hashem's instruction would have almost been equivalent to the building of the golden calf. Do you realize?
No, Aaron couldn't.
No, he couldn't.
Even if he thought of it.
Exactly. Until Moshe would give them that instruction. Okay. It's a very good question. So that's the point. The point is that anything of this kind has to be instructed either through Moshe, but by Hashem. So, and that wasn't yet done. So that's a good, yeah,
thank you.
It's a good point.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Any other?
No. Excellent.
Okay. So in Mirtz Hashem, next week we will continue and see a little bit more. Yes, this is quite a